You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Welcome back to She Pivots. I'm Sally Christensen.
Welcome back to She Pivots. I'm your host, Emily Tisch Sussman. When I was planning this season, I wanted to make sure She Pivots was a means for building connections. I said during our season launch party that we're the generation of women who build bridges and don't tear each other down. And She Pivots is a way to empower women to look inward, define success for themselves and not by society's standards. And it's working. We're seeing a substantial change in the way women think about and talk about their lives and their careers. I'm so excited to dig deeper into these pivotal moments through these shorter, more conversational, candid convos this season. Let's jump right in. If you know me, you know I love an argent suit. And I'm so excited to have the Sally Christensen on the show today to talk about how she's transforming the business wear industry for women. Her famous hot pink suit has been worn by Kerry Washington, Ashley Graham, Governor Gretchen Whitmer, or Big Gretch, and so many more. She's truly defined how women think about workwear, and she doesn't seem to be slowing down. Stay tuned for another inspiring and candid conversation.
My name is Sally Christensen. I'm the founder and CEO of Argent.
Okay, so we'll just do a quick background here. Where did you grow up? What did you see yourself doing when you grew up? Were you dancing around in suits?
Not at all. I grew up in Hardeeville, South Carolina on a farm. I spent my summers in Turkey. So my dad's Turkish and my mom is very Southern, and that combination shaped a lot of who I am. Entrepreneurial, that's what I am. With that said, I think that my upbringing shaped a lot of what I'm doing now because I grew up in a place that I didn't feel like I had a lot of modeling or options in terms of what career could look like because I was in the Southeast, which is really banking, law, and healthcare.
When you say that your dad being Turkish and your mom being very Southern shaped you, like what traits of theirs, was it their relationship? Was it each of their own traits that shaped you?
Well, I think having the perspective that I did, like from traveling to Turkey quite frequently, it's a completely different culture. It's much more familial. My dad's one of 10 siblings. I have one bajillion cousins. And we would spend our summers in Kumba and we'd all stay in this one apartment building. Kumba is a small beach town outside of Istanbul. And we would spend our days going from one floor to the other and seeing different aunts and uncles, seeing my grandmother, seeing like our great aunts. And it was just so special. And it gave me such an appreciation for Islam, for the Middle East, just for, you know, all of these things that I grew up, you know, that was half of who I am. And I also grew up speaking Turkish. So it just really is a huge part of me. And then the South is the South. I'm really grateful to have had that because I think it gives me a deep understanding of what's happening in our country right now. but it was a really special place. Like, I spent most of my days outdoors. I would go jump on a horse and ride bareback, like doing very dangerous things, very adventurous things. But I was a really spirited child. But I think that like a lot of people don't really get out of South Carolina. So the fact that I got the option to do that with these trips to Turkey really gave me perspective.
Yeah, a spirited child. I have one of those. I know how that.
You have two of those.
I know how that goes. That's so interesting. First of all, one of 10 siblings, like, blows my mind. But I mean, Argent is about the work woman, which is so interesting. What I loved that broadsheet. Like, I love the way the broadsheet was framed, by the way. Like, you are honing in on that. And I'm going to get back to that later. Was your mom a professional? Did she wear suits?
No, my mom was, and this was pretty consistent with all of my friends. She was a mom and she was the best. And she very much shaped who I am. She right now works the farm. Like, that's her dream, is to drive a tractor and to be on her own. And she's very tough. And I think that she inspired a lot of who I am. But no, I think that the modeling that I saw from a work perspective came more from television. My dad, my parents raising me without really putting gender norms on me. And so I used to, my dad's, he's an entrepreneur. He had a rug shop which is pretty typical, that he ran out of our house when I was really young, and then had a shop in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And I used to go with him. And it was there that I remember being like, all I want is like a stapler and a desk. Like, the internet didn't even exist, but I was like, I just want to work. Like, this speaks to me.
Yeah. Do you remember who it was on TV that modeled for you? Like, I feel like maybe Murphy Brown.
Katie Couric. But I also watch like the NBA, as you know, is like one of my favorite things on the planet, but also watching men and women, I think. I think both were modeling for me, but I grew up, you know, at the age of 5, watching Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, et cetera, Rosie O'Donnell. But I was really just consuming a lot of magazines, reading a lot of books, all kinds of things. There's no one person that really jumps out, but it was really like men and women that I was, you know, it was pretty typical of kids our age, I feel
like. Okay, I was thinking a lot about this in preparing for this conversation with you. You always describe your father as an entrepreneur, which... Like, when does someone get the title of entrepreneur? Like, what about it? Did you give him the title? Like, what makes someone an entrepreneur versus a small business owner versus like opening a lot of businesses or one business? Like, why do you describe him that way?
So I actually think my mom will hate this, but my dad grew up with no running water. They would share clothes to be able to go to school. And he started selling water in the Turkish bazaars at the age of 5. And he was constantly having to hustle to make money for his family in order for them to put food on the table. And through doing that, he learned so many languages. I mean, he is such a lovely, special human being. And he learned so much about people and different cultures. And I was just such an ambitious person by necessity, to be honest. But he is the third in the family. And there's a lot of pressure on men, especially, you know, antiquated, outdated, gendered expectations. But there was a lot of pressure on him to provide for the family. And so then, you know, he worked his entire life, and then he worked in the bazaars in Turkey selling rugs eventually. And that's where he met my mom. And that's a whole story in and of itself. That's fantastic. But then he moved back with her eventually and opened his own rug shop. But I mean, just the sheer nature of what he's always done is like define whatever it is that he's going to be selling. And he owns the entire experience and process of that, and the good and the bad that comes with that.
Okay, but wait, now I want to hear about how your parents met.
So my mom, she comes from a more privileged background. So I'll say that. So they're backgrounds are very, very different, which has also shaped who I am. She went abroad after graduating from college with a group of friends, and they did this 6-month trek through Europe. They went into Russia and they were in Turkey for a short stint. And while they were there, their tour guide, who was Turkish, was bringing them through Istanbul. And my dad saw my mom at a post office and asked her to go out with him, and she politely declined. And then later that day, they were in the bazaar, and he saw her again and asked her out, and she declined again. And then he convinced the tour guide to ask her best friend so they could do a double date to make her more comfortable. They went out that night. He took her rowing, his big rower. And then they finished, my mom and her group finished their trip, and she ended up moving back to Turkey in with my dad, which used to be the story I told as if it's normal. And now that I'm an adult, I'm like, oh, that's wild. Wild. I'm like, yeah, totally. Then she just moved in with him and stayed there for a year, to the point where my very traditional grandfather was writing letters to Turkey threatening my dad to like send his daughter home. And then they ended up moving back to Asheville, North Carolina, which is where my grandparents were in retirement, and eventually got married. But the best, they're still married 40 something plus years. I could do the math, 48. But the best part of the story is actually that the other couple is also married, living in Asheville, North Carolina.
No, that is wild.
Yeah.
Wow. The matches that happen in a Turkish bazaar are like better than Bumble. Like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah. So that's really what I hope the takeaway of this episode to be is for everyone to rush to Turkey, to the bazaar that's looking for a relationship.
Yeah. Totally.
It's there.
Do you think that that's sort of like pick up and move, like pick up and go story, really, like you really internalize that like as a normal thing to do? Because when you graduated college, you just picked up and moved to Chicago. Like, you didn't know anyone. You didn't have a job.
Yes, probably inspired by my parents, for sure. I think that they did a really great job raising me. I love them very much. I have an older brother, and they gave me the confidence to just pursue whatever felt right. And I think my entire upbringing, as much as I appreciate and loved being raised in the Southeast, it was obvious that that's not really where I was meant to be long, like in my adulthood. And so after college, I knew I wanted a big city, and everyone kept saying New York was way too big, which I would have loved New York, you know, but I was like, okay, what's like the next option? So I just chose Chicago and moved there sight unseen.
Were you prepared for the wind?
Yes.
You knew it was coming.
Nope. I was prepared for whatever was going to come my way. I figured it out.
How did you figure it? Like, did you get off the plane and went where?
I scouted. So I studied abroad my senior year in college, and I met kids from all over the country. And when we came back, we would do these reunions. And one of those reunions took place in the University of Oregon. And one of my best friends from studying abroad was his best friend from growing up, is now my husband. But I met him during one of those trips. It was the last week of college. Dave moved to Chicago. So Dave, who I met one time, was in Chicago, and I was like, can I come check out apartments? And like, will you just show me around? He was definitely not interested in a relationship at that point and had a lot of growth in front of him. But that was like my only real connection to the city. And I found an apartment, went home, packed up my car, drove to the city, and then just started networking.
Wait, okay, this is a new element of this. So was there an underlying draw there that you were like, well, let me just see what happens if I'm in the same city as Dave? Or not even, like, it was totally platonic.
I think I was more focused on my career at that point, and that the happy coincidence of where things have gone with Dave is,
yeah,
you know, just the upside of that choice.
So did it take a while before you guys started?
Years.
Years before. Did you stay friends the whole time, or you just like ran into him again at a Turkish bazaar to run?
We both went to Turkey. No, a lot of my friend group was formed through Dave's friend group as well. So like a friend of theirs growing up had gone to Northwestern. So we became friends with a lot of kids from Northwestern. I was just really social at that stage, and we didn't have phones. We didn't use technology in the same way. So we were really like forced to get out and just be social.
Yeah.
And those were some of the best years of my life, because you're not close enough to family. So your friends become your family, and you have to really, I mean, there's so much learning in your early 20s. And I actually sat around after college for a long time waiting for someone who would move with me. And I was so annoyed because everyone would like fake commit and then just not really like do it. And so I finally just did it on my own because I was so annoyed by that. I have a very real bias for action, and it was the best decision I ever made. It sort of set me on the path that I this journey. We've moved a lot though since then, but it just sort of gave me the confidence, I think, to just take big risks and put myself out there, and it all works out.
I feel like you just put language to something that I felt my entire life and never known how to articulate, a bias for action.
Oh yeah.
Did you come up with that term yourself? I really feel that.
I sure didn't. There was my manager at Cisco used that to describe me once, and I was like, what does it mean? So then I figured out what it meant, and I was like, oh yeah, that's me. So that's, yeah.
That's incredible. I love that came from a manager. I feel like I got like the negative version of that in performance reviews that was like, you're always jumping ahead of everyone. Like, why don't you let the process play out?
Isn't that so like female specific though? I feel like we get the worst professional like guidance sometimes. Stay in your lane.
Yeah.
Do less, you know, just be perfect. Cool. Great.
Yeah, totally. So, okay. So you were always thinking about yourself. Like you wanted the stapler, the desk, you wanted the job. Like I love thinking about like young Sally. You're like, I'm here to network and I'm also here to be a corporate boss.
You know, what's funny. I was actually in Chicago to have a good time. So undergrad, I was the worst student on the planet. I've really just banked on my, like, I'm smart enough. I like didn't apply myself. So I was like, I'll be fine. I'll get like B's and C's and we'll call it a day. But I was very social. And I actually think that that was one of the best decisions I have made. Granted, I'll think, oh, I wish I'd spent more time in the library, because that's now what I love. Like, I love learning. I'm a total introvert. I've really accepted who I am more. But in those days, it was a great exercise of like human learning. And that I think is like 60% of success, if not more, is understanding people and how people operate and like understanding like yourself and how to interact with different people and how just sort of navigating and like the networking aspect of things and the life aspect of things and understanding people's motivations, et cetera. So I actually think that was really a huge takeaway from undergrad, which I then applied to Chicago because my plan was to go back to grad school and I knew that. So I just wanted a job that I was learning from because I am always wanting to just be learning. That's like that's a trend that you'll see throughout all my career choices. But in Chicago, I spent more time being social as well. And then once I got back into grad school, top of the class.
I feel like I am learning so much about myself in this conversation. I have like the ways that you are illuminating and reframing choices that I made, like are making me reflect on this. Like similarly, I did not do, like I was terrible in college. I was just partying.
Yeah.
And I've never looked upon that favorably. Like I don't tend to look back on my own choices with a lot of regret. Like I think that regret is sort of like a wasted.
Agree.
A wasted feeling, because I think you learn something out of all of it. The one thing I do kind of regret is really how little I applied myself in college. Like,
yeah.
I really missed a lot of opportunity. I don't think I was doing any like particularly sophisticated thinking about navigating interpersonal relationships. I think I was just partying all of the time. But then similarly, I went to law school and I was like a different person. Like it turned on for me. I was applied in the first time and similarly graduated in the top of my class because I was like a different person.
Yep.
But I didn't know I was going to go to grad school. I thought I wasn't smart because I had done so badly in college. So what about you gave you that confidence to think like, oh, I'll just turn it on in grad school?
I don't know if it was intentional. Like, yeah, I'm benefiting from hindsight and these stories, but I have always, my parents will say I've always been confident. And it's similar to what you said about regret. Like, I think there's certain things where we own these emotions and we deserve to be like kind to ourselves. We deserve to be confident. And it's a learned trait for some people, you know, but we waste a lot of energy on guilt, on shame, on all sorts of things. And so it's, I don't know, probably like I have a natural tendency toward like to be confident, but it's something that I like wish for everyone because it does shape kind of your life experience, you know? But I just have had it. I don't know why.
Okay, so you didn't just go to graduate school. You went to get your MBA.
Mm-hmm.
That's really serious. That's a really serious graduate school.
And law school's not?
Yeah. Yeah, but I thought I was going to be a lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought I had to go to law school because I was going to be
a
lawyer.
Sure, sure.
Like, MBA is just like, well, I think I'm good at business and I want to be really good at business.
You know what it is for me? So the way that I operate is I really need context. So if you just come at me with like a story and it's a piece of something, I struggle a little bit if I don't have like full context. So knowing that about myself, I wanted to get some experience after undergrad, and I studied business in undergrad as well. I wanted some applied experience and I wanted to take that back into getting an MBA because I needed a better understanding of like the major functions of business. And in your 20s, you know nothing. Like I think back to some of the questions I asked in interviews as if I was smart and I'm like, oh, I sounded just so young, you know? And so then I had that experience. And as part of that, I lived abroad in Germany for a year, which was the draw to this particular program. It's the International MBA program at the University of South Carolina. And so I got to live in Germany and then I worked at Daimler as part of that and came back, got hired at Cisco Systems, and they have a leadership rotational program. And again, it was like me wanting to have applied experience on the heels of academic experience. All of these choices were intentional to try and de-risk starting my own company. And so I spent about 10 years just trying to understand business as best I could and then took the leap.
So you were always thinking there would be a company that you would found in the end. It wasn't like, I think some people come to this with like a specific product in mind or a specific function in mind. You were thinking about skill building. Were you also looking to find what that company was going to be, or you just felt like it would come to you?
This was skill building. I love that articulation. That is certainly like, it was in the back of my mind that I wanted to start a company, period. I was passively there. I was not actively thinking what company should it be. I just assumed that it would present itself and the timing would present itself. And I actually actively tried to not start the company I ended up starting because I was like, I really like apparel seems tough, you know, and this is not what I do, et cetera, et cetera. But it was just sort of like undeniably slapping me in the face that this was my calling. So here we are.
Okay, we're going to get there in one second to the founding. But what skills do you think that you did get, like, you know, whether it was through the international MBA, like let's foreshadow a little bit, or whether it's like, I mean, 10 years at Cisco is nothing to slouch at. Like that's a serious...
Not at Cisco, 10 years across all of these.
Oh, 10 years across all of them. But like that's real time you put in there. So like what... You know, if the premise of the show is like everything builds us to the next thing, like what skills do you look back on now? And you're like, thank goodness I did international, what's it called? Like import export or, you know, like whatever the thing was.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so many examples of it. I think we already touched on the piece about just the interpersonal skills, all of that. I ended up in client facing roles generally and across all of my experiences. And I think that was sort of an obvious thing for me with a background like waiting tables, et cetera, you know, in my childhood. And so in Chicago, I think there was a lot of personal development that needed to happen and growth. And then going into my MBA, I was an adult at 24. You know, we all were just, I feel like we all reached that stage where we're like, I know everything. But then it was in grad school that I was forced into different groups and different projects, you know, carrying some weight of the team sometimes, you know, like mixed caliber of partners, but they're like forcing you. And that's what all you do in grad school is just work together on projects. And so you're like carrying the load or the weight of the team sometimes. And other times you've got like shared load.
Well, let's hope they listen to this podcast and feel called out. I just want some accountability
here. And by name, I'd just like to call out. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
I want some accountability for you and your grad school groups in this podcast.
I've actually been building up to this moment where I can call out the people that forced me to do the projects.
No. The company, the stores, the L profile. It was all building to this moment to call out your grad school people.
I mean, I just learned so much. Where I learned the most, though, was definitely Cisco. So Cisco was... I chose a program. It's their leadership development rotational program for MBA students. They put 4 people in this program every year, and you do 6 months in all the major functions of supply chain. And Cisco is a top 10 Gartner supply chain. So in addition to that, because there's like an executive course that goes along with that, where you're getting exposure to all the like top management at Cisco, which in corporate environments, I don't know if you've had experience with this. Those are like celebrities, you know, like it's like the weirdest dynamic, but it was so good because executives in tech at that level are excellent at what they do. Like they're so smart. They pushed me so much. And I cultivated these relationships with individuals that really helped me grow personally and professionally. I also really like honed my skill set around communication, My favorite saying is, if I'd had more time, I would have written you a shorter email. So good. So good. Because it's like, you have to take into consideration like who you're communicating with and how you and what you communicate and how much detail they need, or how you distill it to like one sentence because it's the CEO who is receiving a billion emails, you know?
Yeah.
So that consideration is probably what came from Cisco.
Yeah.
The last one is that at Cisco, I made the intentional choice to join the cloud group, as which was a new initiative. They invested $2 billion into cloud. They were late to the game. And I was the seventh person on a team that grew to 250 in a year. And that was entrepreneurship. It was, you know, I had the luxury of like, you know, endless cash, essentially, and being able to learn on Cisco's dime. But I got to build a team, define a team, grow a team, manage people for the first time, which is really, you know, you learn a ton from doing that. And then I gained some confidence in myself through doing that and felt like, okay, this is the point. Like, I'm ready.
Like, I've essentially launched a business without my own risk in it.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I understand all that I need to go start something.
I feel like what I'm hearing from you is when you say, you know, like you love the context for something, I also think you give yourself context. Because if you're moving through all of these, like this rotational program and these different positions where you go into it with the mindset of learning, that takes away some of the sting of like putting our own egos in it, of being like, oh, I got feedback and I didn't do it right. And I'm trying, or, you know, like, or maybe I'm trying to stay in the same position because I know that I'm doing it really well and I'm too scared to try something else. We're going to take a short break for some ads.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at Meaningful Beauty.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Now back to the show. But like, I hear your mindset going into it as a learning mindset. And then I think you were able to get so much more from it.
I love that observation. Yeah, I think that we give up too much power sometimes to our jobs and to our employers. And it should be a mutually beneficial relationship. And for me, and we've touched on the fact that I'm a confident person, but I do walk in with confidence that if it's not working out, and let's say I do lose my job, then I can find another job. No harm, no foul. But if I'm not my like authentic self and speaking my mind and going after problems and trying to learn and doing all these things, like that's not fulfilling to me. And on the flip side, to walk in scared that I'm going to lose my job is just not a great dynamic. And so I think my approach to employment has always been, how many jobs in the world are they? Like, can I just get a, like, this is going to be a good experience. and I'm going to learn from it. And I always want to make sure that I'm in a position where I'm learning.
Well, starting your own company is definitely being in a position of constantly learning, but you do become very attached to it. Like, it is your vision. So you went through this, you felt prepared for it. How did the specific product lane come to you in that moment?
You mean, how did I land on Argent?
Yeah. Like, how did you land on Argent?
I have always been frustrated by the fact that nobody is catering to the professional woman from a wardrobing perspective. My mom will tell you, like, we went to a number of places for my first job interview to just find a suit, and how much I would complain about it because there was just, it was such an afterthought for these legacy brands. And, you know, I was just always sort of sour about it. And I think about what I wore across all of my experiences, and I was never deriving confidence from it. It was always such a time suck to find anything, let alone something I felt decent in. And I worked across different industries that all called for different dress codes. Like, it was a whole thing, you know? And then when I was at Cisco, I read a study that showed that women are judged based on appearance, and they quantified the impact of what you wear on your bottom line over your lifetime. And that was all it took. I was like, okay, you know what? I have thought about this long enough. In a decade, no one has innovated the category from a product perspective, and I see an opportunity to do that. I'm at the forefront of the casualization of the workforce. Women in tech are really being left to their own devices because there is no model of dress in tech. No one's setting the dress code outside of a few men. I just saw a real opportunity to create a workwear authority that was a resource to these powerhouse women across, you know, every industry, every city. And really, it's a time-constrained, ambitious woman that doesn't really want to be thinking about it, but she does want to wear something she feels great in. Everyone does, because we derive confidence from what we wear. So I think I saw an opportunity from a product perspective. And then, as I'm sure is obvious now, on the mission side, I had a front row seat to a lot of misogyny throughout my childhood into my career. And I'm very, very much, I mean, someone who just loves women and feels that they deserve equal opportunities. And I saw how that conversation was being handled and how everyone was sort of checking boxes, but it didn't feel like anything was really changing the narrative and impacting in a meaningful way. And this was in 2015. And it almost got to the point where we were talking about it so much that people assumed that change had happened, but it wasn't happening. And I remember talking to people about this idea for Argent in 2015, and they're like, oh, we're about to have our first female president. How could you say that? So many people. But to me, the conversation just wasn't nuanced in any capacity. And I saw an opportunity to do that through a brand, because I think that brands are the most powerful thing in the world and can have very real impact with their platforms. And the gap that I touched on earlier that I saw was that no one was catering to the professional woman from a product perspective, but also no one was capturing those women through their visuals. No one was celebrating the women that I was seeing at Cisco day in, day out, and like telling their story in a way that encourages women to just pursue whatever it is that they want to, and gave them representation and allowed them to see themselves in all walks of life. And so I wanted to do that through the brand and really serve as a resource.
As you're, again, you're making me think about like reflecting so much in my own life and like the choices that I've made. I always wanted to be a costume designer.
What?
Yes, I almost went to art school.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I feel very strongly about how that you put on your armor. Like, you are reflecting the way you want to feel, the confidence you want to bring into a room. And so I've always kind of fluctuated in the way that I've dressed. Like, I got like very wild, or then I was like, now I'm a law student. This is corporate me. And so I don't think I've ever told you this. You know how people like notoriously take the bar in their pajamas? Like, people like, go,
I didn't know this.
Oh, this is like a thing. They're like, oh God, I've been like studying so hard. That sounds awful. I can't even get dressed. Yeah. Well, I did the exact opposite, that I had to look like a lawyer. And so I took my only suit and I wore it to every single exam I took in law school. And I wore it to every single day of the bar, head to toe. I wore a suit. I wore a shirt. I wore heels. I wore jewelry that I would have to take off so it didn't bang on the desk when I wrote in because I had to dress like it. And then, you know, like I moved to Washington and I worked in military policy. And so I had like an all black suit look for that. Probably a lot of Ann Taylor. I feel like that's just generally people were wearing in Washington. And then as soon as I left the military policy job, I was like, well, now I'll dress the way I want. Although not really, because it was still Washington. But there was no middle ground for me.
Yeah. Oh, that's so fascinating. Also, let's not write off costume designing.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, just saying.
I still kind of dress like I'm in costume.
I think that, though, is when I talk about the study and like awareness of the fact that you're being judged based on appearance, I think that it's good to be aware that there is very much gender inequity in our society. But I also think we've tried to flip that to focusing on giving women confidence in what they're wearing and giving them options that make them feel like their best self and like their authentic self. And it also serves as armor. So it's like, you know, when you step into, and this was me at Cisco, a room full of men and you're the only woman, you want to feel the part, you want to look the part, you want to feel your best, you know? And I can dissect all sorts of, you know, things that happen and why it matters around that. But I think that it is so important that we find clothes that make us feel our best and we can use that to our advantage, especially in like a corporate setting.
Yeah. I mean, you want to feel your best, but I think the era of the black suit, you know, when I was doing it, when I had to as a lobbyist and in military policy, I didn't feel like I could bring any of myself into it.
Yeah.
And so I think I was downplaying my own perspective and experiences. Like I was only there as a vessel to communicate on behalf of our clients. I think if I had had something where I could feel like I was dressing more aligned with myself, then maybe I would have had more confidence to have bring my own perspective into it as well.
Yes.
And by the way, my kids wear uniforms and Fridays are dress down days and my four-year-old wears a costume every single Friday.
Is that your spirited one?
She's my spirited one.
Our daughter would be.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Best friend. Mine's almost four too and she is.
A lot of costumes. Love. I think it's great. Like if this is how you feel you want to express yourself today, it's unicorn day. It's mermaid. Today she went to school in a wolf costume.
That's great.
Yeah, it's perfect. Okay. So you entered a new category of apparel. This is not, I mean, even though you had sort of entrepreneurship, a lot of tactical experience, leadership experience, apparel was new. And I feel like maybe I'm generalizing here, but I feel like most people that go into apparel actually don't come from a business background. They come from like a design background.
That's right.
Yeah. So how do you think you had unique challenges and then how could you have solved them with your background? How did you solve them?
Yeah. So I think that business is sometimes like underappreciated or undervalued and it's important in every business. But I do think that my skill set could be applied to a lot of different categories. Like that's just the sheer nature of business. And that excites me. That's why I was drawn to it. When it comes to apparel, it is a very challenging category. And I had seen a lot of people actually start businesses focused on women's workwear. They all looked the same. No one was innovating. And it felt as if oftentimes the consumer was then designing the product. So it would be the equivalent of me then designing the product, which is, I would not be here if I had done it that way because nobody's going to want to wear what I'm designing. Similar to our careers and like, you know, how we've taken a not so linear path, but like everything's built up to this point. There are so many talented men and women who are pursuing creative careers focused on product design and you know, there are creative aspects of any business that go hand in hand with that skill set. And so I knew out of the gates that I was going to need to find a creative counterpart. And that's always been represented within Argent. Our creative director now, she joined us 3 years ago, is unbelievably talented. I mean, she's 20 plus years in design. She's worked across a number of incredible companies and she's designing the product, she's picking the color palette, et cetera, and I'm the consumer and it's very much collaborative, but I'm pretty hands-off. Like she's the expert. And I think you have to recognize what you know and what your blind spots are. And I was very aware that that was pretty critical to building a product-led company.
Can you talk us through, I mean, what every entrepreneur says is that the things they don't know once they start end up kind of defining the first couple of years.
Okay, let me sit up.
Yeah. Get comfy here. But can you talk us through a couple of those? Like you decided to produce in the US, which was not happening a ton there. Clearly, you had to change creative directors at different points. Like, can you talk us through some of those pieces where you thought, okay, I might be out of my depth here?
Yeah, I think that it's incredibly important to be able to have micro failures. And that's true of any career. It's especially true when you're building something, because there's no way that you're going to come out perfectly in every, in every aspect of what you're building. And there's a lot of personal growth and development that comes along with this. You have to, when you make the decision to take the leap and start a company, you have to have conviction and vision in terms of what the end goal is. And I tell people, if you have that, then you will make it. That's the only way you'll make it. If you do not have that, do not start. Because how naive I felt going into this journey was pretty startling. There are so many things that you have to figure out and get through. And it takes very thick skin. And with that said, back to the failure piece, like, it's just part of the journey that you make mistakes and then are correcting from those.
Were you able to have that perspective when you were in it, similar to the way you went into learning experiences? Like, it's okay, I'm learning. Like, were you able to say, okay, this has been a micro mistake? Or were you like, oh my God, it's over?
I never thought it was over. And I'll never think it's, I think that's what makes me a good entrepreneur. There's a learning that's baked into that, which we can come back to as well. But for me, Argent will succeed because I believe that women deserve it. So I will do everything in my power to make that a reality. And I have overcome things like COVID, right? That was an intentional choice of survival, because the opposite was the more obvious choice, which would be to just shutter the company because we went to $0 days overnight.
I want to go back to COVID. Can you, because I have more questions about COVID. Can you give us more examples of like sort of micro failures?
Yeah. So some of mine, I think that starting something is really lonely, and it's become way less lonely for me. I mean, I've been doing this for 9 years, but because it is lonely, you are a bit vulnerable. And when you're hiring, and this was mine, but I would project my enthusiasm and my passion onto people that I was interviewing to the point that I would convince myself that they were perfect for the role. And I wasn't letting them convince me of that. And I allowed people into the company or agencies into the company that were not the right fit, but it was because I was so desperate for, rounding out a skill, like the skills that I did not have, because I was aware of like some of the things that I didn't know or that I needed. So I think that was one for me. It was rushing hiring decisions. And now we've gotten much better at that. Hire slow, fire fast. Fire fast is probably another one that I have had to learn over time. I used to give people the benefit of the doubt or try and justify XYZ, but I've really honed that muscle to recognize when someone's not working out. And if they're not working out, you've just got to follow your gut and do it quickly.
That's a topic we actually have not gotten into on this show. So I'm really curious to talk a little bit more about it. How long do you give them now? What do the conversations look like?
It's really challenging and has been one of the hardest parts of business, the personal piece, especially as a woman. What I've noticed is that the second you give negative feedback to an agency, or you fire an agency, or you fire a person, it pivots from professional to personal. And it's not a personal conversation. Anyone that we hire, we have a business need for hiring that person, and I want them to succeed. If it doesn't work out, I think two things are true. One, I should be able to give very direct feedback and criticism on work or whatever, and not be judged personally for it. That's more true on the agency side. I've had a lot of experiences where, older men will become very, I don't even know what word to use.
They're too emotional to lead. Men are too emotional to lead.
Unprofessional. Yeah, too emotional to lead. It's wild. It is actually very true. So I've dealt with that, and you just develop thick skin. Like I just said, now see it for what it is. And then in terms of firing fast, Argent is an extension of me, and I'm the most tuned in on the cultural piece. So we are very much trying to hire people that are a fit for our culture. We are collaborative. We are supportive. There's no room for politics. And just as a soundbite, like the first 10 hires at any startup shape your culture. It is so important to what you're building. It is everything. And then once someone starts, I'll start seeing things. I think I'm, you know, it's either they're over delivering or there might be some flags. It comes in at different points, but the second, and I mean the second you realize that it's not right, like you have the second you have that thought, it's not going to change. It's only reinforced. And so that's what I'm saying. Like from early days, I would see those flags for years and not do anything about it. And now I'll see a flag and it's done the next day, because the thing that happens is that it sits with you, and time is your most valuable resource. And I need to ensure that not only for myself, but for the entire team, that we're not distracted by someone that's not a fit, and that we're not having to carry that load, and we're not getting caught up in the stresses that come along with that. And so we'll make those decisions and have those conversations very quickly. It's not something I'm an expert at, I would say. I think that we've done both ways. We've tried to coach people, you know, and get them to a place where it could work. We've never had success with that. And so I think that we have had people come in that have areas of opportunity that work out long term, but I don't think we've ever had the sense of, oh, it's not the right fit. I think it's just that, oh, there's some development that can happen here and there's some learnings that can happen here. When it's not the right fit, it's a pretty cut and dry conversation. And that's where it can really go off the deep end, personally. And I've experienced that a number of times.
Yeah, it's so interesting. It's really interesting for me to hear you talk through this. You know, the majority of my professional career has been working in politics. And there is this sense that I think because we are brought to the work emotionally, or not emotionally, but values-based, it's a sort of an extension, we're working on an extension of what we believe in, that it's so personal that there's also the sense that you can't fire anybody. And I actually think a big part of the dysfunction of politics is that you can't fire people because it would be perceived as rejecting them personally. And so I actually have like no insight into how to run a corporate environment. Like my sister and I were sort of like coming up at the same time. Like she was very corporate and I was working in politics, and she'd be like, oh, I had to fire someone again today. And I was like, you can't, but did they steal? Like, did they murder your firstborn? Like I thought that was the bar of firing somebody. I had no sense of it. So I see how it can actually be much healthier.
It's necessary, and the best leaders, your sister is one of them, the best leaders can do it, and they'll do it quickly and they'll do it unemotionally. It's pretty cut and dry. And we just have to shield ourselves as much as possible emotionally, because I can recognize when it's coming from someone's own baggage. Mm-hmm. And it's not about me. They're just sort of projecting onto me. But it's such a bummer because, you know, it's disappointing. Like I said, we're hiring people that I like personally, and I've had to let people go that I like a lot personally, but aren't the right fit for what we're building. And ultimately, I'm a steward of Argent, and like, I have to protect the company. That's my job. And people have to recognize that as well. And I have to protect the people on the team that are delivering. I want to also mention, I think that it works out for both parties. So I've seen people that do react really negatively, but then they land on their feet elsewhere and somewhere that is the right fit. So I don't think we are for everyone. Like, I don't think we're perfect either. And I have learned from every instance where it hasn't worked out, because I'm definitely not perfect. I think we hold women to such an impossibly high standard. With all of that said, you just can't keep someone that's not working, and you want to make sure that you have perspective that where they land afterwards is going to be a better fit for them, you know, that it always works out.
Totally. Okay. Well, this leads me into the team that you've built as a whole, because that now also includes your husband. Have you considered firing him?
Never. Oh my goodness. I'm like, please never leave us. I was actually complimenting him this morning. We are opposites. We took a personality test. This was something we took at Cisco that I loved so much that we now do it at Argent every year. And it's so good for team building, because we learn how we all like tick and operate and communicate. And he and I took it, and we're like exact opposites, which I think I knew, but to see it in black and white like that was like pretty fun. But the beauty of it is that I trust him completely. And in our personal lives, like I know that he's going to take care of things and do things and I don't even have to think about it. And he doesn't stress about things that I stress about and vice versa. So like, we're just a really good balance. And for him to step in professionally, that didn't happen until 2019. I launched Argent in 2016. I started working on it in 2015. I was looking for a marketer. I was looking for someone that has that CMO skill set and I was living with that person. But I was not using Dave on the business because I needed an outlet and he was my outlet those first few years. And so we got to this point where I'd been looking for this role for a long time. I think it's actually one of the hardest roles to fill. And he slowly started like dipping his toe and doing some of the work. And it was obvious that he was the perfect fit. I mean, he has the perfect background. He has worked across Electronic Arts, Apple, Adidas, you know, just McDonald's. Like, he has such a cool resume, such a cool skill set. And he started in 2019 and it's been a wild ride because two kids have also come, you know, along with that, but it's perfect.
Do you guys have boundaries for keeping the professional and personal? No boundaries. Perfect.
Great. No. If you need to know anything about mindfulness and like taking care of yourself and boundaries, I'm not your gal.
Okay, great. Yeah, well, I'm not either. I wouldn't even know what questions to ask.
I do think when people talk about this, it becomes really fluid when you start something because it is fun. Like, what I'm doing is really fun. It's so stressful. There's so many times where you're like, you think about quitting. Like, that's just the name of the game. But at the end of the day, like, I'm always thinking about Argent, and that's the beautiful thing about it. But I have flexibility that I can go pick my kids up at 4:30, or Dave and I can go, you know, do something random on a Friday. So it works for us. It's all very blended.
We're going to take a short break for some ads.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty, beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Now back to the show. When I looked at, you know, like, I look at your product of like suiting, workwear, office, and I look at the timeline of starting in 2016, I think I intellectually knew there must have been like kind of a dip around COVID. But then I went back to listen to interviews that you've done, and you did a big podcast in 2020, right before the pandemic hit. And the punchline, like the kind of launching pad of that podcast was, we've never really, you look so uncomfortable right now. We've never really marketed, and we're about to do a big marketing push. And I felt it. I was like, if she only knows what's coming.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so talk us through this.
So I am a slow and methodical person. And I think building a company in apparel takes about 7 years to strike it all right. So it's like you're iterating on product, photography, visuals, team, all the things. And we were on a more accelerated path, but I was always a little bit slower to market. We got to 2020 and it was like, it was a time where everyone was like gangbusters. I don't know if you remember this, but early 2020, every company was doing great. The economy was thriving. Like, it was good times.
Honestly, I had a third baby in February of 2020. I don't remember much.
Oh, okay. May 2020. But anyway, we were just, all of our metrics, they were excellent. Like, we were ready and we were going. And then 8.5 months pregnant, March 13th, and the world shuts down. And everyone was writing emails like, in 2 weeks, we'll reopen. And Dave and I had to have some really hard conversations because I was thinking I was going on maternity leave and going to have like a proper break because we had a nice team in place. And instead it was like, what's about to happen and how aggressive do we want to be with it? And it ranged from, do we quit to do we furlough the team, lay off some team members, get out of all of our leases? We had 4 stores at the time and an office. And we went with that option, with the choice of trying to survive and just gut it out. And it ended up really working in our favor because we made that choice when no one else saw what was coming. And so it gave us a 2-week head start and we got out of our leases, which allowed us to survive. Then had a baby, which was actually a nice escape because I had had a proper leave. But I mean, a lot to unpack there as well, because it was just the two of us and 2 kids and just no help.
I'm also feeling super stressed out for you that a newborn baby felt like a nice, stressless release for you. Like, I'm concerned for your mental health here.
That's the right takeaway. But it gave me like some joy at a time that was so tough and brutal. And I got a text from an investor I'll never forget. There's an article from CNN that said, workwear is dead forever. And she said, we should talk. And I didn't throw my phone, but I certainly could have. I was so angry because it was so inconsiderate. Like, it lacked such empathy for something that I've been building for such a long time that I'd put my like blood, sweat, and tears into. Fast forward to now, that person's like my best friend and reposting and sharing and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, love her. But it was stuff like that where it was like, I'm so focused and locked in right now on surviving and how we're going to get there. We ended up running a campaign in October of 2020 that made our year in one day. The supermajority campaign, the hot pink suits, it went viral. Billions of impressions. At the height of the pandemic, we sold out of a hot pink suit. It was bananas. And behind the scenes, I'm walking around with like a sleeping baby, you know, on my front, and Dave's playing with a toddler somewhere. And it's like the two of us really running this like massive campaign. And that gave us, I think, some pep in our step. And, you know, fast forward to 2021, we started seeing the return to certain industries. So we kind of dressed women that were working at the White House throughout. We then see, you know, some lawyers around that start to return. And we just started seeing parts of the country start to return. And so the beauty of COVID is it allowed us to step back and really, really re-strategize on everything and take all of our key early learnings and apply them all at the same time and just come out swinging. So in the fall of 2022, I bet the farm on the return to the category, delayed consumerism, women are going back to the office, they haven't shopped for this in a long time, bodies have changed, the list is long, and that proved to be true. And on the heels of that, I then, you know, raised some money and the rest is really, I mean, now we're just scaling and we've been trying to catch up with demand and we're finally in a position where I feel like we're slightly ahead of it. And it's been so fun and it's been the opposite experience of what COVID has. And we're executing in a different place and the competitive landscape's wiped out. There's a lot of upside in COVID for us, but I'm sure there's still a lot of trauma for me to unpack, which I haven't dealt with. And, you know, someday we'll.
All of us. that time at home with the kids. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really. So where do you think you're going?
So the vision of Argent is to provide tools and resources to women to allow them to optimally navigate their career, to remove barriers for women. And I think that for us, our goal is to be the workwear authority, but also to really own the office because nobody does. And it's the thing that excites me the most in the world. learning women's stories, connecting them, bringing men into the conversation in a meaningful and significant way. And so I think for me, I want Argent to be synonymous with working women. I mean, just incredible women and reframing how we think about what society looks like and having women represented at all levels. And also reshaping how we talk about moms, because that's the hardest job in the world. And so how do we establish some form of flexibility that supports them in those dark early days, you know, that can be really demanding, and then also allows them to put mom on their resume and then go back into the workforce and speak with authority to the skill set that they've taken from being a mom.
Yeah, I feel very strongly about that. What is one thing that you look back and at the time you thought, oh my God, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. I'm not going to make it out of this. And now in retrospect, you see it as having really positioned you to where you are now.
I mean, COVID. I hate to answer with COVID since we just talked about it, but in what scenario was I thinking, oh, wow, and then there'll be that day where nobody goes to an office. So you're like constantly assessing risk and you've got your risk mitigation plan, whether it's formal or informal. But my job is to ensure that no decision is fatal. And so I'm always like hedging our bets. And so I think the second it was obvious that women weren't going to be going back into offices and who knew when they'd be returning, was a pretty like, oh, fuck moment. And then getting past that, I mean, that's a very stark example that does not happen for everyone, but that exists in everyone's journey. There are moments where you're like, I just need to go watch Netflix, or like, I just don't want to fight through this. It's such a hard thing. It's impossible to articulate. And there are just those days or those weeks where everything seems to be no, everything's going against you. And you kind of learn how to like navigate that over time and just allow it to happen and just sort of take a back seat when you need to. And then when things are going your way, to lean in all, you know, completely. But it really all goes back to the fact that Argent has to exist, period. And I'll do anything to make that happen. And because I feel that way, there's really like nothing that I'll allow to take us out of the game.
I believe it. Well, thank you, Sally.
Thanks for having me. This was so fun.
It's so fun. Sally is still building her power suit empire and lives in New York with her family. Be sure to shop all the amazing Argent suits at argentwork.com. Thanks for listening to this Candid Convo episode of She Pivots. Check back in weekly for more conversations with inspiring women. To learn more about our guests, follow us on Instagram at She Pivots the Podcast. Leave us a rating and comment if you enjoyed this episode to help others learn about it. Talk to you next week.
Hey, listeners, before we close out this episode, I just wanted to pop in and let you know that on top of having the pleasure of interviewing Sally, I'm also a proud investor in Argent. As I interview and meet people through She Pivots, I've been lucky enough to get involved with a few of our guests and their brands, and Sally and Argent being one of them. I'm so proud that I'm able to invest in these incredible women-owned brands, and I'm excited to continue to do my small part in helping these women embrace their pivots. That's all for now. Talk to you next week.
Special thanks to the She Pivots team, executive producer Emily Edifilosik, associate producer and social media connoisseur Hannah Cousins, research director Christine Dickison, events and logistics coordinator Madeline Sinovic, and audio editor and mixer Nina Pollack.
I endorse She Pivots.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.